Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Sugar is everywhere. Approximately 80% of products in the supermarket contain sugar, not only desserts. Sugar is highly addictive, even more so than cocaine, nicotine, and alcohol. Daily consumption rates sail way past what's recommended for a healthy diet, opening the door to health issues down the line. Tuat Duhl, host of Frontline Health Podcast and CEO of Centurion Labs, brings an important distinction to the table. Not all sugars are created equal. The sugars naturally found in fruits and veggies are part of a package deal with essential nutrients and fibers, which help balance out things, making them a healthier choice. On the flip side, added sugars, the kind manufacturers sneak into foods and drinks during processing, often none of these benefits. Instead, they're more like empty calories that in excess can lead to a host of problems. Troy, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, what was the impetus for your examination of sugar and its impact?
I think the biggest thing is just having kids myself and knowing the food choices that they had. And, you know, my background is in health-related industry. I spent some time as a soccer player and really trying to get the best out of my body, and then understanding that there was an epidemic, it seemed like, of sugar, and really didn't understand where that epidemic was coming from. Because it seemed like even if people were doing their best and starting to cut back on things or have fat-free foods or sugar-free foods, that there were still some health issues that were coming up. And really, just out of curiosity, wanted to find out more about what was going on with sugar itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is it so important that children's sugar intake be reduced? Of course, I guess dietary patterns are set early when kids are young. That might be one, but share with us, you know, what is the real push with sugar and children?
Well, obviously, you touched on it at the intro, and that is sugar has some incredible addictive qualities. Mm-hmm. We know that it hits the same spot in our brain that cocaine does, mm-hmm. that any addictive product really does for our bodies. So it is highly addictive. And what you find out when you start to jump into things is you see the processed foods, especially those foods when we're on the run and we're trying to get kids to school, or we're trying to make something very quick for our kids to have as a snack or lunch at school. All those pieces that are prepackaged have huge mm-hmm. amounts of sugar, and they sneak it in under the guise of being healthy. And I think some of the more tricky things are when they throw in it's sweetened with fruit juice.
Oh. Well,
that's great. Great that it's sweetened with fruit juice, but they took out all the good stuff with the fruit and left you with just the sugar. So it's still just as bad for you.
Oh, well, share with the listening audience, just so they have an appreciation. When we say sugar has been addictive, what does that mean?
Sugar, from studies after study, they did some studies with the National Institutes of Health overseas, and they actually gave rats an option between taking cocaine after they had shown an addiction to cocaine mm-hmm. and sugar, and in some cases, saccharin. And they found that those rats preferred sugar and saccharin over the cocaine, even though they had developed an addiction to cocaine, which to me is mind-boggling.
Isn't it?
You can have something that addictive, and it's in our foods. Yeah. It's kind of scary, really.
Yeah. It's in just about, it seems like every time I read on sugar and its impact on our nutrition, and it's in every damn near everything.
It seems like it. And the things we don't think of that we mm-hmm. don't think of as sweet, mm-hmm. like barbecue sauce or even salad dressings,
yes.
tomato sauces. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the worst.
Yes. Well, now I encountered in reading that most added sugars are consumed at home. Is that accurate? Is that true?
In some
degrees, I did read that, you know, in several references, and I thought I just made a note of it because I wanted to consult with you about that.
Yeah, and I would probably agree from the standpoint of most of those added sugars are going to be in the processed food. So if you're getting a cereal bar in the morning and thinking, mm-hmm. hey, this is healthy for me, and you're taking it for your snack, it's got added sugar in it. Mm-hmm. If you're okay. getting yogurt, which most of us would think is a really yeah. healthy snack, and it is, but a lot of them throw in so much sugar that it takes away some of those health benefits of it. And then if you throw in things like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or any of those soft drinks, Gatorade, that we don't think of as having a ton of sugar, those can blow the sugar intake that they recommend for us in one can of Coke or Pepsi. And those are things that I don't think we spend mm-hmm. a lot of time thinking about. Mm. And kind of piggybacking on that, what they say is that kids on average are getting about 81 milligrams or 81 grams of sugar per day.
Oh,
and
wow.
the recommended dose for men is 36 grams per day. And for women is 24. So our kids are blowing that way out of the water, but you know, we're not so good as adults either. We're getting about 77 grams mm-hmm. per day. Mm-hmm. So we're blowing that number and recommendation way out of the water.
Well, you know, we can't avoid it because it seems, again, and I know I'm being redundant because I keep saying this, but you keep agreeing with me, so I guess I'm on the right track. Sugar is everywhere. I mean, breast milk is sweet, okay? So
yes.
My question to you would be, how do we identify it and avoid it? Is that a reasonable question? I mean, can we reasonably expect to be able to identify it and then come up with a strategy to avoid it? Or is that more just rhetoric?
No, I think there is a way to do it. Now, it's going to take a lot of intentionality. It's going to mean that we've got to take ownership of our health greater than most of us do typically. Mm-hmm. And part of that starts with just reading the back of the labels. I mean, it's as simple as doing that. And when we recognize that, oh my gosh, this can of orange juice, which we think is great, or a glass of orange juice, if you look on the back of that orange juice, typically they'll even sweeten that to the point that you're getting 39 to 50 grams of sugar just in that 8 to 12 ounce glass of orange juice. So it's not just soft drinks.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get very, very cognizant of the things that we're putting in our body. And you know, one of my big missions in life is to have that understanding that, hey, our bodies are an incredible creation and they were designed much like an automobile. If you put in the right fuel, you get the right outcome, and you will perform at a much greater ability, both mentally and physically, if you put in the right nutrients. Mm-hmm. And that starts with some of those things that mom always told us growing up. Eat more fruits, eat your veggies, and make sure that you're not getting too much of the Coke or other sweet things. And I think as you're growing up, you're told a lot of these things, but we get that sweet tooth addiction,
right.
And it's hard to defeat it.
Well, I want to jump back to something and then we'll continue. But you said, you know, a big key was reading labels. Reading labels can be difficult. And so I was going to ask you, is there any recipe app, whatever, that you would recommend? Because you can start reading those labels and some of those ingredients become quite difficult to understand. I always felt like, ooh, the more difficult they are to pronounce, that sounds like the worse they are for you. I don't know.
There is a lot of truth to that, for sure.
So what do you recommend to someone who really wants to make a difference? They know that sugar's not good, and they're following your prescription, but how do they know how to read the label?
I think it starts with, don't get too caught up in the words. Mm-hmm. Go straight to, thankfully they've passed some legislation that says it's supposed to tell you how much sugar is actually mm-hmm. in that product. So you can go straight to that section on the label, the supplement facts, mm-hmm. and it will tell you how much sugar is in that product. And that way you can just start counting it. Keep it easy. Now, if you want to get into the weeds with it, pretty much anything that ends in O-S-E yeah. is going to be some yeah. form of a sugar. So if you see that on a label, so sucrose, dextrose, maltose, high fructose corn syrup, any mm-hmm. of those are just other names for sugar. And we've got to be very, very cognizant of that, as well as fruit juice when they start to throw these other things in there, yeah. which we've already discussed.
Yeah, because, I think just generally you think, fruit juice. Well, that's healthy. That's good. Orange juice, apple
right.
juice, And then once you look at the label, you're like, maybe that's not a good idea, okay? How much sugar is in it. Yeah, okay. What I'd like us to do is look at Madison Avenue. Because Madison Avenue, from where I sit, seems to play a particular role in the sugar consumption, particularly when we are looking at children. Okay, it seems to play a role. I'm talking about, for example, when you go to the checkout line, what is there, at the checkout line? All types of sweets and goodies and things that kids are, interested in, so they appeal to them. So we're going to take a brief break. But I just wanted to kind of let you know, as we say, pull your coat so you'll know what I'd like to talk about when we come back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour I'm talking with Troy Duell, and we are talking about the impact of sugar on just our everyday lives. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am talking with Troy Duell. Think of your body as a finely tuned machine. This is what Troy is saying. Just like any machine, it needs the right kind of fuel to run efficiently. When we overload on added sugars, especially fructose, it's like putting the wrong kind of gas in the car. It might still run, but not as well. Over time, too much sugar can lead to insulin resistance, a condition where your body struggles to manage blood sugar levels effectively. This can set you up for type 2 diabetes and heart issues, not to mention it can also fan the flames of inflammation, contributing to everything from joint pain to certain problems. Troy, just before we went on break, we were talking about sugar and its impact and how ubiquitous it is. And I brought up Madison Avenue and advertising and how it shapes the sugar consumption among children. Would you provide and talk about how advertising normalizes sugary products?
Yeah, I think it's easy to see. And I think even as all of us were kids, we saw either Tony the Tiger with Frosted Flakes or Captain Crunch with his cereals that you had, or Lucky Charms and mm-hmm. the little marshmallows. All of them made us desire to try those. And all you have to do is try it once. And it's really hard to go back to regular cornflakes after you've had the frosted ones because they taste so good.
Yeah.
And it is addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely one of those things that we see and we are influenced by it. And, you know, in some ways, that's where as parents and as individuals, we have to understand the buyer beware and understand what the long-term health effects are of having sugar. I think you laid out a great case against having too much sugar by talking about some of those issues that come up. And I think one that we see more often now, and part of it is age-related, but we do know that a great deal of dementia is related to sugar intake. Uh-huh. They're now, in many cases, calling dementia type 3 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So just from that standpoint, we should begin to really take into greater consideration what we're putting into our bodies.
Yeah,
that indeed is true. And doing that, I think, again, and I mentioned it, that parents need to be aware of the advertising impact. Even just something like the placement of sugary products. Because that is so outstanding to me. I mean, it just, you know, you have to check out Al, and they have all types of things that are horrible, you know, nutritionally bad for us, especially children, okay?
Absolutely.
Do you see a link between sugar addiction and economic disparities? Is there a link?
I don't know that there's a link to that, because I think as humans, we all are addicted to the sweet stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter whether we're rich or poor, we're all going to be drawn to that. And we're going to see a greater desire to have it. Now, I think there are certainly education disparities that can come into play. I think there are probably studies out there that I don't know, but single parent homes are probably harder to control that, because you don't have two people saying, no, you can't, and kind of backing the other one up, because it's so easy to continue to hear your kids say, hey, I really want this, I really want this, and give in, especially when you're by yourself. But if you have a backup, I think that makes it a little bit easier to have a backbone and get some courage to say, no, that's not going to be the best thing for us, and really try to work past that. And, you know, one thing I did want to mention is, I think one of our go-tos now is, hey, this has a lot of sugar in it, so I'm going to go to artificial sweeteners.
Yes, that's you're reading my mind. That was my next question. Yeah.
And that's one thing that I think one of the best lines I heard, and I don't even remember where I heard it, but it was, you can't make an unhealthy food healthy by changing it to an artificial sweetener.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is unhealthy before and you decide you're going to take it, take out
worse.
The sugar, and that's right, and put in the artificial sweeteners, it is not going to do you any good from a health standpoint. As a matter of fact, there are plenty of health issues that they're starting to uncover with artificial sweeteners.
Mm-hmm.
The first is, it's 700 times sweeter than sugar. So it still causes that addiction and the dopamine release that we're familiar with sugar. But it also still leads to type 2 diabetes. We know it also leads to hypertension and obesity and cancer. So it's not really that much greater of a benefit. As a matter of fact, between the two, if I were to look at it, you would probably want to go with healthy sugar, which is difficult to find. We've already talked about that, but healthy sugar alternatives, or put stevia in there or coconut sugar, because they found those are a little bit better than some of those artificial sugars that are out there.
Well, I want to kind of go back to something, because I tell you what I was thinking about. Maybe I didn't phrase the question well, but when I was talking about the link between sugar addiction and economic disparities. I was kind of indirectly referring to food deserts and food deserts where, you know, the community is influenced by what is available. And what's available may be fast food or a lot of processed foods. And that's where I was wondering, because we know that sugar consumption is linked to all types of health issues, the diabetes and fatty liver disease and cardiovascular disease. But I just wondered, you know, those who live in communities that don't have fresh fruit, don't have the availability and don't have access to fresh fruit and fresh vegetables. And most of their food, they might pick it up at the 7-Eleven or the bodega on the corner, which may indeed have more processed and fat and fast food type things. I mean, would you agree with that, or am I just looking at the wrong thing?
I totally agree, and that's where greater intentionality comes into play from that standpoint, and being even more educated, because I think it's one of those things that human nature, we're going to go to the path of least resistance. And if it's not right there and it's not available to us, we're going to have a greater likelihood just to pick up whatever's in front of us and go out the door with that and think that it's healthy. Mm-hmm. But again, just making sure that you're reading those labels, no matter where you are, and then making that intentional, conscious effort to the best of your ability to say, hey, I don't have it in this particular store that's closest to me. Is it better for me to drive a little further to get it from somewhere else? Or do I even start my own garden and start trying to add some of that into my diet? And I think those are the ways that no matter what economic background you come from, we can figure out ways to get a little bit better. May not be perfect, but I think we can always strive to get better.
How do you feel about the use of food as a reward for children? And it's commonplace. You know, you do real well, you get a cookie. You do real well, you get a package of M&Ms. You know, what are your thoughts on this practice? I mean, what message are we sending kids? Because this is almost across the board. They do it a lot in school, or either you'll get a star and you can go to the canteen, and in the canteen you can buy all, again, these sugary things. So I just wanted your comments, what you thought about using food and sugary food as a reward.
I totally agree with you, and I have to give a mea culpa, because I have been guilty of doing the very same thing with my kids. And I think we all have.
We all,
to some degree or another. But what we have to understand is it's not necessarily bad to have one treat every once in a while.
Right.
But
right.
It's when it becomes a habit and it's an everyday thing. So we don't want to get to the point that we celebrate our birthdays by eating carrots and celery. We still want to have that cake, because we still want to be celebrated, and we want to please our taste buds every once in a while. But it's when it just becomes a habit and it's an everyday thing, that's when it really starts to pile up. So be sure that you're not rewarding them for just getting up in the morning and getting out of bed and giving them something sugary, but make sure that it's a reward for something that is monumental and that is doesn't happen very often. And I think that you can do that. So that's my particular take on it. But again, if we get into the habit of our daily lives, making sure that we're cutting out that sugar consumption and we're reading labels and we're jumping into as much fruits and vegetables and natural products, organic whole products that we can, then I think we are on the path to making some big changes in our health.
Well, will you talk about what is added sugar? When they say added sugar, I think of two types of sugar, fructose and glucose. But talk to the listening audience about added sugar.
That is a great question, and something that I think it's confusing, because we think of added sugar like when you had your cornflakes as a kid or Cheerios, and you got a scoop of sugar and you put it onto your cereal and you were good with that. Well, it does include that, but it is so much more than that. So any sugar that they add to the food while it's being cooked, while it's processed in order to help with just the flavor enhancement and to get your taste buds lighting up. So any added sugar means any sugar that they have put in there that does not necessarily have to be a part of that recipe. And they add more in order to get us to want to come back for more, and get us addicted to it.
Is there any good sugar?
There are good sugars, and you kind of touched on it earlier, which are those natural sugars. So any sugars we get from fruits and vegetables, and we've all had oranges or bananas or strawberries or blueberries or watermelon or any of that stuff that is sweet, that is natural sugar. But the good thing, what is good with those natural sugars is it's usually filled with fiber to make you feel full. So those added sugars have no nutrients, like you discussed earlier, which means you're going to be even hungrier 10, 15, 30 minutes down the road, and it makes you want to go back for more to eat more. So it doesn't really help you feel full. And when you don't feel full, you're going to eat more. And that's why natural sugars are a much, much better alternative for you. So if you can get in the habit of when you want something sweet, go pick up a carrot, get an apple, get an orange, get a banana, any of those things, and they're going to have natural sugars, but they're going to also have the fiber that goes along with it to make you feel full.
And I know I've asked this before in different ways, but what about the individual? They're listening to this program and they're going, I think I want to start change my lifestyle to a reduced sugar lifestyle. Where do they start? What do they do? I mean, I would guess the first start would be with knowledge, knowing what is what, understanding the
Absolutely.
various. But would you talk about under, I guess what I'm asking you is looking at various strategies that help one navigate lifestyles where sugar is not so ubiquitous. Does that make
Yeah, and
sense?
that's a great question. And I think it starts, and we discussed it earlier, with just taking inventory of how much sugar you're really taking in a day. And it starts with that awareness. So once you become aware, once we become aware of an issue, we have a tendency to deal with it as individuals because most of us don't like to have some kind of problem hanging over our head. And when it becomes a big enough problem, we actually find ways to solve that problem. So first, start and see, just take inventory of how many grams of sugar you're taking in per day and start writing it down. And I think if you do that, that's the first step. And don't forget about the salad dressings and the barbecue sauce and the tomato sauce and the other things that we're adding on to our foods to help it taste good, ketchup, mustard, all those things. And we start taking a good look at how many grams of sugar we're taking in per day. And then once we do that, I think we can begin to add other components to say, okay, what is a better alternative for me that I can come into and start building a health regimen? And that starts with getting more fruits, getting more vegetables, and finding ways to get that into our diet, whether that means growing it ourselves. And with prices, that's not a bad idea if we can. But if we start growing it ourselves and we start really taking ownership of that piece, then those are two simple things that we can start to put in place and really get off that sugar kick. And the final one that I always say is start to reward yourself just once a week. So you're not going out every day and being tempted by cake or pie or something else when you go to a friend's house and they've got some cookies out and you just say, no, thank you. Because in the back of your mind, you say Saturday night or Sunday afternoon, that's my day that I'm going to get my sugar fix. And mm-hmm. I'll get a piece of cake. I'll get some cookies, whatever it is. But you just shovel it into one day and it starts to take some of that real need away. And it begins to make you aware. And it also rewards you for having a good week.
Okay. So what, if I was going to paraphrase, what I hear you saying as far as strategies to looking at minimizing your sugar intake, the first is just being aware and understanding the sugars and sweetnesses that are in your life. That's what I hear you saying. You know what you prioritize, looking at what's going on, what sugars are found in all these processed foods, and know what you are taking in to your body. Know what you are ingesting.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And then I was going to suggest that once you get through those three steps, then you can start looking at alternatives. So some of those alternatives out there that seem to have pretty good, results from studies. There are a couple that you're not sure of with stevia.
Hold your thoughts. You got to take a brief break, and we'll come right back to you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and parents and families. We'll get right back at you in a second.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. I'm talking with Troy Dwell. Currently, he serves as the CEO for Centurion Labs. Troy, I had to interrupt you. Would you continue your thoughts?
Absolutely. And it started with just taking ownership of what we're doing. So you mentioned keeping track how much sugar that you're taking in each day and then having a reward day. And then once you get to that point, really looking for alternatives. One of them I think we left was stevia. Mm-hmm. There have been some great reports on how stevia can be beneficial, but it doesn't have some of the same effects that sugar does on our bodies. There are also some studies recently that would suggest otherwise, but the great majority of the studies have been positive on stevia. Mm-hmm. There's another form that has come out recently called monk fruit, and there have been some positive things behind monk fruit as well. And then look for things that may have coconut sugar. Those three seem to be three of the better ones if you want to find some other form of sugar besides normal table sugar and besides artificial sweeteners.
Well, let me ask you, we're in the last segment of the program, and I want to ask you before I forget it, but what do you think of the school lunches? Because what message is that sending?
That's a great point. I think we have, if we want to educate our children on ways to eat better, then we need to really start with that school lunch and give much healthier alternatives. And that to me can be an example, and it can start showing kids what they need to be taking each day. And I think there's some great ways that you can do that. As they're standing in line to get their school lunch, you could almost have a video talking about the need for health and the detrimental effects that you could have down the road. You could have educational infographics up with each food and talk about those type of things. Because even though they're young, they still have an understanding of, wow, if this is what's best for my body, then I probably should do that. Now, not all of them will, but for the most part, I think if given the choice and they have that information in front of them, that they'll, in the long run, at least have that in the back of their minds to eat correctly and know what they need to do. And then ultimately, the choice is theirs once they become adults.
Troy, do you have any resources, apps, books, programs that you would recommend to the listening audience, to the parents and teachers and whoever may be listening, to the adults in these kids' world that may be listening, that would help them in addressing the sugar OD?
Yeah, that's a loaded question because there are hundreds of apps out there that can help with diet. Now, it may not help specifically with sugar, but it certainly helps with your overall diet. And you can go to the Apple App Store and you can find anything by texting in diet. And it's really what I always recommend when it comes to those apps or any other component that you're trying to put into play to help you with your health is it doesn't matter how good it is or where you find it, if you don't use it, it does no good. So make sure that whichever app you get or whichever book you pick up to start to address some of those health issues, then it's got to be something that is going to be easily applied by you. And maybe it's just taking one idea and using that idea to build your first step in getting better health. And my biggest piece is the how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time, and that is the same way we take our health. We're not going to become super fitness person overnight, and we've got to
That's
take
true.
small bites and start that momentum. And eventually, if you do the right things and you start putting those pieces in place, your health will take care of itself, and you're going to live a much more fulfilled life because you won't have to rely on medications near as much. You won't have to rely on the medical community near as much, and you're going to be able to move about and be active for much longer.
How does one, and I'm thinking, yeah, let me add, how does one know that they are addicted to sugar? I mean, do you have any little insights that you would share when one is addicted to sugar? You might have to
Yeah, I think it's as simple as that. When we start to crave for something sweet every night or after every meal or during snack time, that's when we know that we've got a problem. And if you're craving things that are outside those fruits and vegetables, there's probably a good chance that you've got some kind of sugar addiction that you're going to have to battle. And we all do. And it's easy if if you go on a vacation and at that vacation for 2 or 3 days, you're spending time eating cake or pie or whatever else they put in front of you, or you spend time at grandma's and she's got everything out for you that's really good. Well, when you come back, you realize how addicted you are because you're all of a sudden looking for something sweet to eat. And I think that's a good way to look at it is, what are my cravings? Am I craving things that are good for me, or am I craving things that are bad? And if I'm craving those things that are bad, there's a good chance that I'm going to have to cook or kick that sugar habit just a little bit.
At what point would you recommend a nutritionist become involved? Because some folks may indeed need that at that level. I think of these kids, and they have sugar all day long, And I don't mean the little small kids. I mean, particularly, I'm thinking of high school kids and college students. You know, they grab stuff that's full of sugar, and that's what gets them through the day. You know, a McDonald's hamburger, you and I know how much sugar is in that. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's what gets them through the day. What point do they need to have some outside intervention, some outside recommendations? Because sometimes people do need that.
I totally agree. And I think a lot of that is dependent on the personality of the individual. Uh-huh. I know there are a lot of people who need that same person to help them at the gym and kind of encourage them along. So if you're an individual who needs that help at the gym, it's probably not a bad idea to get somebody to help you on the nutrition side. And that way you're getting two people giving you input and holding you accountable to get to that next level in your health. Now, there are also other people who maybe you don't have the financial resources to hire somebody to help you at the gym or to hire a nutritionist. Then find another friend or a colleague or someone else that you can hold one another accountable and begin to say, hey, this is what I want to do. And you design that plan with somebody else, and there is a much greater likelihood that you're going to go through with the plan and you're going to be successful with that plan because you have somebody holding you accountable. And most of us don't like to let other people down or to be asked about something if we're not doing what we said we were going to do.
And also, I think about those who are sophisticated enough to understand this. And with that comes maturity, is what I'm trying to say. As one begins to break, I guess, the dependence on sugar, they've got to change their mindset, like at least acknowledging the issues. You know, there's a general change in mindset. I mean, am I on the right track, or would you address this? I mean, what do you think?
I totally agree. And I truly believe it comes back to the ability to take ownership of our own health. You know, I always go back to COVID. It was a wake-up call, I think, for many people in the United States. That when you had 95% of the people who died from COVID had 4+ comorbidities on average, which means they either had heart disease or they had obesity or they had diabetes or something else. So we've got to take ownership of our health. And when we understand that and we have that mindset of, okay, there are times when it's going to be on me to take care of myself. The medical community during that time didn't really help us much. Our families couldn't be there because they weren't allowed in. So ultimately, it was on us to take care of our health and to step up and do the right things with staying healthy, with exercising, and being making sure that we're eating the right foods, because that's going to help us no matter what comes down the path in the future of disease or any family history of things that you have. We know that if you're eating right and you're exercising, you're going to be way ahead of the curve if you have something come along that is a health crisis.
Well, I think you kind of touched on this because I was going to ask you, how much does it cost to have reduced sugar, to become sugarless? And I ask this because a common complaint is when one changes their diet, their lifestyle, the complaint often is that it costs. So is that a real variable that we need to be aware of?
Absolutely. I think there's a reason they call whole foods whole paycheck. It's really expensive. But that's where, if we're going all the way and we're truly taking ownership of our health, we can kick in with trying to grow some of that ourselves and reduce the cost during the seasons that we can grow it. Now, granted, a lot of us can't grow it year round, but there are plenty of us, especially in your area, that you could grow vegetables almost year round.
Yeah.
And start just adding something to it, whether it's lettuce or tomatoes or peppers or whatever it may be, you start adding to that and it'll help cut down the cost over time. Now, it's not going to save you year round, because there are certain times of the year that you can't get some of that fresh fruit and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But if we start to plan ahead and we start doing those things, I think that can help with some of the cost. But the other thing it can do is, honestly, we probably have way too big a portions of the food that we do eat. So we will end up cutting back on that because we just can't afford near as much. And in some ways, that can be a good thing, because we cut back on the portions that we're having. But again, I think there are just ways that we've got to start thinking outside of the box and going, hey, this is important to me. It's important to my health. So what can I do? Does it mean I have to grow some? Does it mean I have to cut back on my portions?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make sure that my body is getting what it needs and I'm not relying on somebody else or some other thing? And we just try to pick off as many of those excuses as we possibly can, because ultimately, that's what we're doing. If we succumb to just getting something easy, we're just letting that be an excuse to having poor health.
Well, in these few minutes, I have a couple questions that I wanted to ask you, make sure that I asked. I read several places that women and children consume about 3 times the daily recommended limit for sugar. Is that accurate? And if it is, what is it about their diets that make their consumption so high?
One word, chocolate.
Oh, really?
No, I'm
really?
Just kidding. Just kidding.
That's good. I liked it, though.
but the truth is, while men are recommended to have 36 grams per day, women are recommended to have 24 grams per day. Mm-hmm. And that only has to do with weight and the size of a man versus a woman. So because of that, we're still eating the same food. So most men and women are going to eat at the same places. We're eating the same things. We're typically eating the same portions.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, we're taking in the same amount of grams of sugar per day, which is about 77. So again, it's a lower recommendation, but we're taking in the same amount of food. So that's the biggest culprit of why women and children are taking in 3 times the amount of the recommended dose.
Is it true that half of the sugar intake comes from beverage? Because I saw that a lot, too. And, you know,
yes.
Just in preparation for today's program, you know, say half of it comes from, I saw that in about 3 articles.
That is pretty accurate. I mean, when you consider one can of Coke has about 39 grams of sugar in it, and the recommended daily amount is 36 grams for a man and 24 for a woman, and what we're doing on average is 77 grams per day. So yeah, half of our sugar comes straight from our drinks, and that doesn't include, I mean, a glass of orange juice, like we mentioned earlier, has about 40 grams of sugar in it as well. So it's everything that we drink, Gatorade, and those are things that we don't think about as really counting towards our sugar levels. But you're absolutely right. It is devastating to the number of grams of sugar that we're taking in.
Well, the essence of reducing sugar intake goes beyond merely avoiding sweets. It's about making informed choices to nourish our bodies more effectively for immediate and future health benefit. It entails scrutinizing labels, preferring whole foods over processed ones, and understanding the impact of our dietary choices on our bodies. In a world where sugar is hidden in many foods, staying informed is our strongest safeguard. Troy, you know, it's really been a delight. And I appreciate you sharing your expertise with my listening audience because it's something, the information you shared is just really invaluable. But it's also time out for this edition of 411 Teen. I want to extend a special thanks to Troy Twell. And to my listening audience, I appreciate your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at wfsu.org.